You are listening to Big City Small World on CBC Radio 1 99.1 in Toronto. I'm Mariel Borelli, bringing you the best of the week that was and the week to come in music, arts, and entertainment. Still to come, a conversation with musician, composer, and trumpet player extraordinaire Brown Mann about sharing stages with Paul Simon and Jay-Z. We've got company in the studio today. Brahman Ali is my musical guest. He wears so many hats that it would take me a few minutes to mention them all. And I'd rather spend those minutes playing some of his music. This is Brown Mann and his trio with Mos Def on vocals and Catholic School Girls. That was Toronto's Brahman Ali on trumpet with Mos Def and his electric trio in a piece called Catholic School Girls. Not only is he an award-winning trumpet player, he's also a composer, arranger, and a studio musician. Some might say, including myself, that Brahman is also an all-around nice guy. And well-educated, too. He has a master's in jazz, a bachelor of science degree in physics, and a minor in philosophy. He heads seven musical groups of his own and tours all over the world with A-listers. As you might imagine, he's on the move constantly, but today, he's all ours. Brahman, hello.
Hi, Muriel.
So nice to see you.
I know. We go back so far. So great to be back here.
Listen, I could start with the music, of course, but I cannot get over the fact that you have a physics degree.
Oh, geez.
How did that happen?
That's parent stuff, really. I mean, I was a bit of a whiz kid coming through school. Like, I finished high school early and I graduated with like a 97 average in like maths and sciences and stuff. So, but I'd been playing since I was a kid, and in my heart of hearts, I knew I wanted to go on and play and be that guy. But my father said, "No son of mine going to be a long." I'm from Trinidad. "No son of mine going to be a long head musician, boy. Go to school, get an education." So, essentially, they said, "Look, if you do a science degree, we'll pay for it. If you do a music degree, we disown you." So
is that how it went?
Pretty much. I mean, my mom will probably call in right now and they argue that fact, but that's how it went. So they were like, "You can't waste your life." And I was like, "Wait a minute, Miles wasn't a waste. Miles Davis wasn't a waste." So yeah, so I was a kid and I didn't have any backbone to say I'm going to do it anyway. Too bad, you know, like to be the rebellious.
Yes,
I'm going to go do it anyway. So needless to say, I said, "Oh, okay," and off I went. And I actually spent a year in biochemistry and I hated it. I hated it. And my marks fell to like 60s. I was terrible. I was like behaving like a typical first year university kid, mm-hmm. away from home and kind of bothered that I was going to be forced to do this other thing. And so I came home and said, with this terrible average, and said, "Look, I'm dumb. Can I please go play trumpet now?" And my father was like, "Go back and do better. You're fooling around." So I have a bit of an ego about doing well. So I went back and I was like, "Okay, if I'm going to get stuck doing this damn thing, I should probably do something I like. What do I like?" I spent an arduous summer kind of deliberating that. And I was a science fiction fool. I was reading like three novels a day, literally. A lot of science fiction literature and I'm a Star Trek idiot. I shouldn't be telling people this.
No, we like it.
Yeah, right. So, but if you pour that through the intellectual strainer, you get physics out the other end.
Of course.
I had a strong math background, so I transferred into physics and I loved it. It just opens your brain to looking at the world from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. But it caused some problems with me emotionally because I was really, like, I finished the degree and I split to New York and then I spent a lot of years down there. I studied privately with Randy Brecker and Manhattan School of Music and just like absorbing jazz from the New York scene. And everybody in New York was so good, right? Everybody. I mean, the dude on the street corner was playing like what I thought was Grammy winning caliber solos.
Wow.
And I was like, "Jesus Christ, stupid physics degree." So there was like a whole self-loathing thing that went on. And I was practicing 8 hours a day and I was kind of out of my mind in New York for a long, long time. But I was like broken inside. I was Humpty Dumpty. I was ignoring a part of myself rather than integrated.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And ashamed of physics and math. I did a lot of jobs to survive that had nothing to do with science. I could have gotten science-related jobs, and I refused to because I was so ashamed of it, right? So I, you know, unloaded boxes from trucks, and I learned to drive forklift, and I have like 3 forklift licenses, like clamp truck,
wow,
and propane crazy stuff.
After spending years learning physics having a degree.
And having a degree, yeah. I blamed it. I wanted nothing to do with it. And mm-hmm. and just like did like, you know, honest work,
mm-hmm.
blue collar, honest work, and then practiced 8 hours. I guess not when I had the jobs, but was practicing. At my peak, I was practicing about almost 8 hours a day. Yeah, I'd have to break it up so my chops didn't fall off.
So yeah. You were trying to catch up, I guess, all the time that you felt you lost.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah. I still kept playing and kept, you know, maintenance and practicing, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I played a lot during my degree, my physics degree. And I did recordings in the beginnings of a recording career. Like I was starting to do little recordings and I had a little band and I was band leading and writing tunes. But I mean, I really felt arriving in New York City and hearing everybody just sound ridiculous. I felt behind the eight ball.
Look where you went, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You were not easy on yourself.
Well, that's the only way, man. Like, I just, you know, you have to set that bar really high in this industry. And especially as a jazz artist, I think it's really important to sort of not look around at necessarily your peers and your high school and your, even within the city, I think,
mm-hmm.
like when I'm trying to play an emotional, expressive solo, I'm trying to like channel Miles. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Coltrane, Duke Ellington, like that's the standard. And so if that's going to be your standard, boy, that's a long road, you know, and a lot of study involved and a lot of discipline and practice.
So from those humble beginnings, if you will, to now, years later, in more than 300 CDs or recordings later,
I'm a rat.
You've
I'm a
played
studio rat.
You're a workaholic. That's what you are. But you played with very, very talented, internationally renowned musicians, from Cuban pianist Chucho Valdés and Paul Simon to Quincy Jones. Mm-hmm. You're just back from recording with Eminem in Detroit, mm-hmm. and from touring with Jay-Z and Beyoncé.
Yep.
What is it like for you to play with those people?
It's fantastic, and it's a deep honor. You don't get much personal relationship, of course, because they have their own. So they want their own space and they have their own people and their own team, and you kind of just show up and do the job. Really more than anything else, it's like, that's the A-list, right? That's the mm-hmm. big big league. So you just want to make sure you're doing the best job you can do and be as passionate and accurate as possible. What I mean by that is, okay, so I use those two terms, and what I mean, accurate in terms of the trumpet playing, right? Because, you know, when I went out to play with Paul Simon, I literally got on a flight, arrived, and I was handed the book, and I was on stage in front of whatever it was, 45,000, 10 minutes later, and I was...
Wow.
Then I had to sight read. I had to sight read that book. It was really scary.
What do you mean by sight read? I don't understand.
So they hand you sheet music.
Okay, and you just have to read it and play it.
Having never seen it before.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, and those are all skills. Like, those are skills that you develop in school. Like, they're mm-hmm. teaching that at Humber College and teaching at UFT and York programs. And that's so you lean on your training at that point, right?
Exactly.
Because that's all you've got. But even if you do the job and you think maybe you played well, you just don't really know what the final outcome is because, I mean, you might have played all the right notes, but maybe that's not the phrasing they wanted. Maybe
that's right.
Maybe the lick is diet, dot, 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 and you went dot, 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 dot. And so, you know, and the musical director's glaring at you and you're like, I played every note. What's wrong? What's happening? So you don't really know how you did until later and actually a good indicator is if they call you back, right?
Exactly.
I'll tell you the Paul Simon story because it's
okay.
Funny. So I get the call of subbing for Randy Brecker, who's won a lot of Grammys. And he was my teacher in New York City. And one of the people say that he's one of the greatest modern trumpet players of, you know, all time. And so he and I'm very much like his protege, sort of built me. And I would say like 90% of who I am is comes from my time with Brecker and my time in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So he couldn't do this gig and he called me up and he was like, hey, can you sub for me on on, he didn't tell me what it was, on a gig. And I said, sure, Randy. He tells me there's a flight waiting for you at Pearson, and you'll fly in and get picked up and taken to the whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, I'm writing this all down. And the very end, just before he hangs up, I go, who's it with? Wait, who's it with? He's like, Paul Simon, enjoy yourself. And I was like, what?
Oh, my goodness.
You mean Paul Simon, right? The Paul Simon interpreter? The cross-dresser?
The Vegas.
Yeah, the Vegas, right. And because it can't be the guy, right? But Randy played on Graceland, and he's been with Paul for a while. So I was like, holy Christ. So I get on the flight, I get there, and there's a car waiting. They pick me up, they take me to the hotel, and I'm waiting to talk to the musical director. And the musical, I get to the hotel, and the musical director is about, I don't know, 40 feet away. He's on the other side of the hotel, and I'm looking at him, and he's holding the trumpet book, okay? And I know that's my book, and I know that we have to leave for the stadium in about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I want that book so I can have 20 minutes to look at the charts. And he just knows everybody, and everybody's coming to say hi to him, and he takes like three steps. He sees me. He waves, and he takes three steps towards me, and then he stops and goes, hey, hi, how are you? Good to see you. Really? I didn't. How are the wife and kids? And so finally, he makes his way over to me like 12 minutes later, right? So I was like, hi, thanks for giving me the book. And so I look at it, and it doesn't look horribly difficult, but the fact is I have to sight read this stuff in front of a lot of people, in front of Paul Simon's, well, the back of Paul Simon's head, like with the back.
That's all you saw.
Yeah, it's all I saw the entire time on stage. So now remember, I haven't met Paul. So we finish and we go to the stadium. I get on stage. I'm looking around. I'm, you know, because I've been in the business a while, but I'm still a fan of these cats. So here, I'm looking around waiting for Paul, and I'm trying to keep my focus, but still kind of excited to see him. And he walks out on stage and doesn't look at the band, because why would he, right? He's looking at his audience. And we start the gig and we do the whole hit, and I'm really like laser focused into the tunes, and we finish, and that's it. We're done. We do a couple encores, and they close the curtain. He comes around, he shakes everyone's hand, right? And I'm waiting for my handshake. I can't wait for my Paul Simon handshake. Here it comes. So he comes around and he shakes my hand. He goes, and he's small, right? He's quite little, so he's looking up at me, and he just goes, Brown Man, thanks so much for filling in. It's great to have you here. You sounded beautiful, son. And oh, we'll have you back, I'm sure. And he turns, and I'm just like, oh, my God. And so he turns away, and he lets go of my hand, and he turns back to me, and he goes, and by the way, I love the ponytail. And he leaves. And that's my Paul Simon story. That's the only Paul Simon story I have. There's no steak dinner. That's it.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah. No,
if you were going to choose one, that would be it.
Yeah, Paul Simon liked my ponytail.
Well, no. Paul Simon liked what you did.
Right. Well, yeah.
on that concert.
Yeah. So I did a couple more after that. And it was an honor. Great honor.
Well, you've been so busy with the Paul Simons of the world, but you always go back to working on your own. You have so many different projects going on at the same time. Yeah. You have seven groups that you lead.
Yeah, that I lead. And then I play with another 37, I haven't counted in a while, but I'm like the trumpet player with a bunch of those guys.
Is that how you like it?
Yeah.
You don't want downtime.
Nah. I'm a terrible vacationer. I'm a terrible vacation. Like, I go to the beach. I go to a beach and I lie down, and within 10 minutes, I have a book. And within another 10, my laptop's out and I'm writing or researching or doing a grant. I did a grant from Cuba. I was in Cuba on the beach and did a grant sitting on the beach. So, yeah.
Your mind is constantly on.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, on. It's, we're hoping on, but yeah. I like it like that. You know me. I'm constantly in motion, and my mouth is constantly going, and I move a lot, and I like the kinetic. Actually, let me tell you, you know Jason Wilson?
Yes, of course.
Juno, twice nominated Juno reggae monster, and one of my close friends, and I adore him dearly, and we do a lot of work together. When we were on tour, he had a nickname for me. He used to call me Crackoma. Crackoma. What does that mean? Okay, it's crack and coma put together. Because Jason would say that when Brown's awake, it's always crack until the coma. And when I'm asleep, I'm dead. I am like a nuclear bomb can go off next to me, and that's it. I'm so done. So
fantastic. Well, listen, it seems to be working, because I heard that your latest CD, Gravitation, with the Brahman Electric Trio, reached number 4 on the iTunes jazz charts in the U.S. recently.
Yeah, geez.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Can I tell you the story? Because it's Brecker. It's not, I mean, like the record was doing okay. It was, you know, sitting where it was sitting and doing okay and getting moderate airplay, etc. But Randy Brecker won yet another Grammy and went on NPR, National Public Radio in New York, to talk about his Grammy win. And at the very end of the interview, they asked him, so what's on Randy Brecker's turntable? And Brecker, and he goes, this my young kid protege up in Toronto, Brown Man, has got a new record out. It's called The Electric Trio. It's called Gravitation. And I think it's the new standard in electric jazz. So he says that on NPR. That's a big statement.
And it's a huge endorsement.
That's a huge endorsement from the man.
Yes.
And now NPR just parrots it. So after that, it just shot up to number 4.
Well, congratulations. You deserve all of that and more, Brown Man.
Thank you.
Listen, I read on your website that everybody that comes up with a sort of a different name for you, but that has some sort of Brown Man in it, you get $1.
Yeah, right.
That's... Okay. So,
all my friends they permutate the name, right? Like Browncito and the Brown Indator and the Brownatorium and whatever you can come up with.
Okay.
But there's a condition.
Oh.
And the condition is you have to actually use it. Like, you have to call me that. You can't just call me that once.
No, I have to call you that.
Every time.
All the time.
So she gets her $1.
Okay. So.
You got one? Uh-oh.
I do.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Go.
Brown Manito.
Brown Manito. That might be used. Eliana?
No.
Okay, no. Browncito, Brown Manito. You know what?
I don't think Brown Manito. Because I didn't see that.
It wasn't,
and it's a mix of Brown Man with Manito, which is like little brother, bro.
Right. I'll take it.
Okay, where's my $1?
Oh, geez. You take a check, right? Here's my checkbook for $1.
It was such a pleasure to spend some time with you, Brown Manito.
Right back at you. Thanks for having me. It's amazing what you guys do at CBC, and it's always a pleasure and an honor to be here. And I feel lucky and privileged to be part of the CBC family. You guys are so good to us artists.
All the best with our 400 project.
No, it's down to 300 now. Love.
The always fun and always entertaining Brown Man Ali. You can find him and his group, Groove Asylum, on stage at the May Cafe in Toronto. That's on Friday, November the 28th. But tomorrow, he's at Gate 403 alongside Jordana Talski. Here they are with their version of Alana Miles' Black Velvet. Dugari dugi do duka hoko da duka
hoko da duka hoko dugari dugi do. This is Brown Man on CBC Radio 1. Thanks for tuning in. You can check me out more on www.brownman.com. My full gig schedule you can get to by visiting gigs.brownman.com, gigs.brownman.com. And please consider joining the Facebook page by visiting fb.brownman.com. Thanks. Good night.